statement of this committee that whenever the chairperson is not around, I will assume his duties in this committee. Unless there are objections to that, we'll have to go through the formal process of electing the chairperson for today. Is that an agreement?
No. No.
Okay. All right. Thank you. You will remember that this is a continuation of the previous meeting we had with Treasury and Revenue Services on this matter, and it was agreed that we will need further information on this particular issue around the review of the revenue sharing formula in SACCO. So the colleagues from Revenue Services are here today. Is that a point of order?
Madam Chairman, that's how it works. Before you begin with the agenda, I would like to address you on the agenda, if I may. Just want to know whether an item is on the agenda. I received a letter from the chairman of the committee indicating that the contents of his letter would be addressed at the next meeting of this committee. And I see that he's not here, but I would like to know, being this the next meeting, whether that will be discussed at this meeting or the next meeting.
That issue, Honorable Ambrosine, will be discussed in our next meeting when we do not have visitors in the committee. The delegation from Revenue Services is led by Mr. Neil Cole. I will now hand over to you to introduce your colleagues or your delegation and those that will be leading the presentation. Thank you very much. And maybe before I can hand over to them, I want to introduce our new researcher for the committee, Mr. Nkwe Mpela. Our problems will be solved in the next term. Okay, thank you. Over to you, Mr. Cole.
Good morning, Chair, and good morning to the members. I'm with the National Treasury, and not with the South African Revenue Services, but I do have colleagues with me from the South African Revenue Services. So I'll introduce myself, and then I'll leave it to them to introduce themselves. So my name is Neil Cole. I'm with the National Treasury. I work in a division called International and Regional Economic Policy, and my specific responsibilities is to look after African economic integration from the side of the National Treasury. I'll now hand over to my colleagues who are with the South African Revenue Service to introduce themselves.
Good morning all. My name is Mamiki Lolo from South African Revenue Service. I'm the Executive Manager in charge of revenue forecasting.
Good morning. I'm Brando Carolison. I'm South African Revenue Service. I'm the Group Executive responsible for revenue planning and analysis.
Good morning. My name is Mvusi Mkeane. I'm also part of the Revenue Analysis Division, Executive.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, let me firstly apologize for the mistake that we made in the presentation in the very first slide by referring to the Select Committee in the presentation. It is corrected in the presentation that you see in front of you, so an apology for that. Chair, this is a good opportunity for us to be presenting to this committee As you say, this issue on SACU and South Africa's involvement in SACU has been raised with this committee on previous occasions, and it was felt that a more detailed presentation, especially on the revenue sharing arrangement of SACU, should be presented. It is a good time because it is a discussion that is taking place within SACU. The review of the revenue sharing formula, while it's been on the agenda for some time, is now gaining momentum, and there is agreement by the five member states of SACU to undertake a review and to see whether by undertaking a review of the revenue sharing arrangement within SACU, we can move to something that is in support of a changing set of objectives that the Southern African Customs Union has set itself. As you are aware, for the first time this year, we've had a summit-level meeting of SACU where the five heads of states and governments came together, and a large part of that has been to plot out a new vision for SACU. That review that is being undertaken at the moment is intended to feed into that new vision of SACU. So we are hoping that by sharing some of the ideas that we have, and just to say that we've not reached finality on what new arrangement we would like to put in place. We have some ideas, we have some proposals, and this is a good opportunity to engage with this committee, and if possible, I think it would probably be necessary for us to come back at another stage. And if the new arrangement results in a change to the SACU agreement, we'd have to come back to Parliament to seek ratification of any changes that may be made to the agreement. So what we'd like to cover today in the presentation is just to look at the context of the review, also to provide an economic perspective of the union very briefly, and that economic perspective essentially compares the economies of the five member states, to provide an explanation of the various revenue sharing arrangements that have been in place. The committee would be aware that SACU is the oldest customs union. It's been around for 100 years now. Whilst I have 1910 to 2002, I'm also aware that there was an arrangement prior to 1910, and it's called, I believe, the 1889 agreement. And under that agreement, South and North Rhodesia, now Zambia and Zimbabwe, were also part of that customs arrangement. But the formula that we're currently working with is part of the 2002 SACU agreement, and we'll focus on that because that is what we are reviewing currently. We will look particularly at why we think the current arrangement that we have is particularly volatile. And then we'll share some ideas on what we think the objectives should be for a new formula and put some proposed changes to the existing formula. We'll have some tentative ideas and then also propose a way forward. As I said, we're in discussion at the moment, and we'd like to see this as part of our consultations that we are undertaking as South Africa. Just in terms of the context, we first tabled our intentions to review the revenue sharing arrangement under the 2002 agreement in December 2006. And this was done at council level. Just to pause very quickly,
the decision-making structures in SACU involves a council of ministers. It is the Minister of Trade and Industry and the Minister of Finance of each of the five member states that serve on the Council of Ministers. And at the moment, the Council of Ministers is the highest decision-making body within SACU. You also have a commission of senior officials and then a technical liaison committee. There are current discussions within SACU at the moment to elevate that to a summit level, but that will require, if that is agreed, it will require an amendment to the SACU agreement. But at the moment, the Council of Ministers is the highest decision-making body. And it was at that Council of Ministers meeting that South Africa notified Council that it intends to review the revenue sharing formula. We undertook some consultations then before we formally proposed a review of the revenue sharing formula. We felt that the review was important or necessary because our argument was that the current revenue sharing arrangement in SACU is unsustainable, and in the next few slides we will show why we believe that it is unsustainable, largely because it does lead to great volatility, especially for Botswana, Lesotho, Namibia and Swaziland, and less so for South Africa. SACU is often accused of being a revenue-sharing customs union. Now, if you think of a customs union, you would imagine that a customs union is set up so that the member states of that union would share a common external tariff, meaning that the tariff would be the same for all trade with the outside world for the union. And that should be the next step after those member states have established a free trade area. But in the case of SACU, because of the amount, because of the collection of revenue, customs and excise revenue into a common revenue pool and the distribution thereof, a large part of the focus of this customs union is revenue. And that revenue, the levels of that revenue is obviously determined by the tariffs that are placed on the goods that are imported into the union. If you adjust those tariffs downward, it obviously is going to lead to a reduction in the revenue that you're collecting, at least in the immediate and we believe that in considering trade policy decisions within SACU, that the revenue considerations have been too strong a factor. Revenue sharing has been a source of disagreement between member states. As you'll see in future slides, in order to determine the revenue, you have to determine, or the revenue share that is paid to member states, you have to determine the extent of trade between member states. And normally, the first day of what is sometimes a three-day meeting to reconcile the trade between member states normally start off where there are huge differences between what Lesotho says it has traded with South Africa and what South Africa says it has traded with Lesotho. We eventually reach agreement on a number, because that number then determines what each member state will receive in revenue. Number four is an important point, because what we are seeing is that there's increasingly the questions are being asked by the South African public, by Parliament, as to these transfers that South Africa is making to the BLNS, whether that is a fiscal burden that is placed on South Africa. whether South Africa should be redistributing the revenue that it collects in customs and excise to the BLNS countries. And we'll come back to that in later slides. And then lastly, the revenue sharing formula in fact limits SACU expanding and getting other members such as Mozambique or Angola or Zimbabwe. Because what it does, it depletes the pool and then gives a smaller share to all the existing member or all the existing member states. The formula, in fact, only supports expansion if another South Africa comes into SACU. And by another South Africa, I mean a country with a similar size economy. So just quickly, an economic perspective of the union. Here we essentially want to do a comparison. And this comparison in this slide and in the next slide essentially shows that South Africa contributes about 85 to say 90% of SACU GDP. Our economy is about 85% bigger than the BLNS economies combined. And that is shown in GDP, that is using at the PPP, purchase price parity method, in US dollars, and then next to that in the second column it shows the real domestic demand, and that is essentially the total goods that are demanded, final goods that are demanded by South Africans or consumed by South Africans, and that shows it in rand billions. What this slide shows is the real exports of goods and services and the real imports of goods and services. And this is basically the economic activity of South Africans in respect of exports and imports. And what it once again shows is that we export as South Africans, we import as South Africans in the region of about, on average, 85% more than that of the BLNS. Just quickly through the different revenue sharing arrangements that we've had in place, and maybe just a bit of a history lesson, and the SACU history is a fascinating history because it plots on an almost parallel stream the history of Southern Africa. So you think of 1910, the Crown introduced a customs administration which was essentially giving the Union responsibility for the administration of customs of the Union and also of the protectorates, Lesotho, Swaziland and Botswana, called something different then as protectorates. So the Union collected the revenue and divided the revenue according to the size of the economies. So many people would say that it was a more equitable arrangement then, because if your economy was 80% of the customs arrangement, what was collected in customs, you would get 80% of that. That was the 1910 agreement. I'm not sure how the 1889 agreement works because I wasn't around at the time. The 1969 agreement was an agreement that was obviously negotiated and put in place by apartheid South Africa, and it turned around the 1910 agreement in that it now started to favor Botswana, Lesotho, and Swaziland, where a share was calculated for Botswana, Lesotho, and Swaziland. And at a later stage, they even introduced a stabilization factor of 17%, which essentially meant, irrespective of what was happening in trade, Botswana, Lesotho, and Swaziland would receive 17% of the value of all imports. South Africa then kept the residual, and that residual could be a negative residual. Some would argue that a more favorable arrangement for Botswana, Lesotho, and Swaziland was put in place at the time because the government of South Africa at the time needed to increase the dependency of those countries on this arrangement. In 2002, we negotiated a new agreement. And what the 2002 agreement essentially did was to introduce a formula that calculated a revenue share to each of the member states. So it removed the residual that was retained by South Africa and said that South Africa will also now get a share that is based on the same formula that is applied in determining the revenue share for all member states. What the 2002 agreement does is that all customs that is collected, so the duties that are paid on the goods that are imported into the union, is paid into a common revenue pool, and that has fluctuated over the last while, anywhere between 17 billion and about 22 billion. Just in the duties that we collect, Mameki will knock me if I get my numbers wrong. So those are the duties, and those duties are determined by the common external tariff, the tariff that is placed on the goods that we import. Then we also collect into the common revenue pool all the excise duties that are paid on goods. So the excise that is paid on a packet of cigarettes, the excise that's paid on a bottle of beer, etc. Those are all now collected into the common revenue pool. And that about matches the amount that we collect in customs duties. So over the past 4 years, and there's been some distortions in those 4 years because of the decline in 2008-09 and 2009-10 in the beginning of the year. We collect in the region of about 45 billion. In the region of about 40 to 45 billion is collected into the common revenue pool, and that collection is determined by the 2002 agreement. South Africa is the overseer or the manager of that common revenue pool. And the reason why South Africa was appointed to the manager of that common revenue pool is that most of the collections happens within South Africa. So many of the goods that would travel to Botswana will first dock at a South African port. Same applies to Lesotho, to a large extent in Swaziland, and also in the case of Namibia. Take the example of fuel. South Africa would import crude fuel. We, the only country of the five member states that have the capacity to refine, we will then sell on refined fuel to the BLNS countries, but when we import the crude, it is at that point that we collect the duty. So there's duties that we are collecting, obviously, on fuel that will be consumed in South Africa, but some of that will be consumed in Botswana, Lesotho, Namibia, and Swaziland. So think of the South African territory as the territory where most of that collection into the common revenue pool is undertaken. But there's also another important reason why South Africa is appointed the manager of the common revenue pool. And it's not dissimilar to what happens in the budgets of departments. In formulating fiscal policy, the National Treasury will say that we forecast to collect so much in revenue, and that is the revenue that we're going to be using to transfer to the budgets of each department. Obviously, you are not paying out only what you collected. You are paying out what you budgeted for. So in the same case as SACCO, there's a forecast that is made of what is going to be collected. That forecast is based on the forecast that we publish in the medium-term budget policy statement. In December, the Council of Ministers will use that forecast, and that forecast will then be used to determine what is the revenue share that each member state is going to receive. So, say December 2009, the Council of Ministers will determine what each member is going to receive for the 2010-2011 financial year. But that is all a forecast. Once we've audited the 2010-11 financial year, which would be September 2011, it is then that we determine what the actual collection has been. We then need to reconcile between actual collection between the forecast that was paid and the actual collection. But it's because of that forecast payment that we're making to the BLNS, which is essentially an advance payment, which gives another reason for South Africa to be the manager, because what we're essentially doing is we're essentially borrowing the difference between what we must pay out in forecast and what we're collecting. In the period since the adoption of the 2002 agreement, 2005-06 to about 2007-08, the forecast that was paid out was always lower than the actual collection. In 2008-09 and 2009-10, the forecast was much higher than what we collected. What then happens is that once you have the audit, and in the next financial year, you then make the adjustment. So you either increase what you're paying to members, or you decrease, depending on what has happened 2 years ago. So that's the 2002 agreement. So there's quite a bit that one needs to watch in terms of what's happening in collections. I don't want to go into too much detail, but this is the formula. So once we have that amount collected, once we've determined what we will collect as part of the forecast, we then calculate the share that is paid to all member states. Now remember I said that what is collected into the pool is based on the tariff or the duty that is collected on the goods that are imported into the union. So say we import for argument's sake, a BMW, we import it into the union, there's a duty that is collected on that BMW. There's also a VAT amount that is collected on that BMW. The duty that is collected on dutiable goods is then paid into the common revenue pool. But when we distribute revenue to the member states, we do something quite different. We don't base it on how much each member state imported. We based it on how much each member state trades with each other. So if you look at the formula, the formula essentially has has three components. The first component is a customs component, and it's that customs component that switches this around. It says we collect on imports from outside the union, but the customs component determines the value based on the trade between each other. So say the three of us are in a customs union, Botswana, Lesotho, and Swaziland. We import goods coming into our union, but when we determine what each one must get paid, we don't base that on how much we've imported, we base that on how much we traded with each other. So it's a bit of a swap that happens. So it's customs equals the value of the intra-trade, the trade of that member state with the union, over the total of intra-SACU trade times the total that is collected in customs. Okay. So what it essentially does is South Africa has a bigger trade volume with the outside world than it has with the BLNS, which is the reason why the contribution that South Africa makes into the common revenue pool is much greater than all the other member states. So South Africa's contribution into the common revenue pool is about 98.6%, and we'll show that in the next slide. The BLNS contribute in terms of what they collect about 1.6% being the difference. But when you calculate the share, because South Africa's trade with the BLNS is smaller than what it trades with the rest of the world, its share of the customs component is about 46%. The BLNS, whilst they only contribute about 1.6%, what they get out is over 50%. So to repeat the formula then, it basically says that it's in the next slide that is shown.
Technical, you know, we're not going to do in a pick and can.
Okay, so maybe all that I should say on this slide is
it's a two-figure fraction. If you can't do it, you shouldn't be sitting in.
That's right. So there are three parts to this formula. There's a customs component, an excise component, and a development component. The BLNS gets the bulk of their money from the customs component. South Africa gets the bulk of its money from the excise component because that is GDP weighted. And each member state gets about the same amount in the development component. So as the Honourable Member has said, the next slide then shows what each member contributes into the common revenue pool and what each member gets out of the common revenue pool. A caveat here is that South Africa does collect duties and excise on behalf of goods consumed by the BLNS. Excise, and that's because excise duty is collected at the point of production. So if Botswana buys Castle Lager from South African breweries, and if they buy so many tons of cigarettes in South Africa, the excise will be collected in South Africa. South Africa will pay that into the common revenue pool on behalf of Botswana. And in another slide, we'll show one or two other examples of that collection. So while it may appear here as if South Africa is contributing 98.6%, but only getting out under 50%, we must remember that 98.6% contains some collections that South Africa collected on behalf of the BLNS and paid on their behalf into the common revenue pool. But we all should also recall those earlier slides, which says that the South African economy is about 85% to 88% of the Southern African Customs Union. So a more accurate description here would be that what South Africa earns in customs and excise is probably about 85%, and the BLNS about 15%. We thought we'd put this slide in that gives some indication of goods that arrive at a South African port that is bonded at the port of entry. It is then transported across South African territory as bonded goods, where the duty is collected in the final destination. The duty is collected in Botswana, Lesotho, Swaziland. So it shows the value of those bonded goods. And then the second table then shows what South Africa collects in duties, customs duties, on behalf of the BLNS. What it doesn't show is the excise that South Africa collects. There's another caveat that needs to be included here, is that there are cases of re-exports. So an example would be, and this is in no reference to the reality, say Mr. Price imports 100 T-shirts from China. The intention is that those 100 T-shirts are going to be sold at Mr. Price outlets in South Africa. But say a decision is taken later on that 10 of those T-shirts are going to be sold to a Mr. Price outlet in Gaborone. When those 100 came into South Africa, South Africa collected the duty on all 100. But now 10 is going to be consumed in Botswana. When those 10 leave from South Africa to Botswana, it leaves under a different regime, which is a free trade area. So meaning that South Africa collected on the 100, all 100 is attributed to South Africa, but rightfully 10 should have been attributed to consumption in Botswana. So there are many of those kind of cases which is referred to as re-exports. And in some cases, you also have improvements being made to some goods initially imported into South Africa. There are improvements to the good. The good then goes to one of the other member states, but goes under a free trade area. And my colleagues from South can speak to some more specific examples of where this happens. This is to show that the SACU arrangement, the revenue sharing arrangement within SACU, has led to a large dependency on customs revenue, on SACU revenue, by the BLNS member states of SACU. If one looks at some advanced economies, some emerging economies, and some low-income countries, you'd see that customs revenue is in fact a in some cases insignificant, but in other cases quite small percentage of total revenue that is collected by those countries. But in the case of SACU countries, especially the BLNS, customs revenue is in fact a very large percentage of what is collected. So if you take Swaziland, for instance, their budget is made up of, or 70% of their budget is made up of what they receive from SACU, essentially what they're receiving from the customs union arrangement. Now, if that was a reflection of the tariff book of SACU, then SACU should have a very, very high tariff. Probably a tariff that would be illegal in the terms of the World Trade Organization, or not allowed by the World Trade Organization. it can only be as a result of this redistribution that is taking place. Customs and excise collected by the South African economy, and because of the formula that we have in place, it redistributes some of that to the BLNS countries. And another slide will show why the dependency on customs revenue is extremely volatile. So following the 2008-09 and first part of 2009 global economic meltdown, which had a recessionary effect in Southern Africa, we have seen customs revenue in particular plummeting. And we have seen it plummeting down to 2005-2006 levels. Actual customs revenue declined from what was a forecast of 31.3 billion, and this is just the customs part, right? This is not the excise part. From 31.3 billion to 22.8 billion in 2008-09. As a result, Botswana, Lesotho, Namibia, Swaziland will all experience a decline in the budget revenue in excess of about 50% between 2009-10 and 2010-11. And this would be tantamount to South Africa losing corporate taxes in its entire entirety. I mean, if you can picture that, then you can understand the effect that the decline in customs revenue is having on the BLNS countries. Say overnight we remove corporate taxes or VAT. I'm not sure what the percentages are, but I think it's about a good comparison. It sounds good to you. So just very very quickly, I think reference has been made to this. But this is a trend in SACCO revenue. The bluish line is what the council had forecasted, and the red line shows what the actual collections have been. So if you look at 2005-06, the council forecast was for 25 billion. The actual collection just under 35 billion. So what we collected was more than what we paid out. What then happened was that 2 years later we would have made that adjustment and we would have paid the difference to the BLNS countries. Remember, South Africa also retains a portion of that in terms of its share. But the point to make in terms of this revenue trend that we are seeing is that customs revenue is a function of the structure of our tariff book. We have higher tariffs on final consumer products, and these are sensitive to demand side pressures. So if you look at what is happening in car, the import of cars, I mean, as this recession hit us and as the credit laws tightened, we saw a dramatic decrease in the import of cars. The tariffs that we collected on the import on motor vehicles and motor vehicle parts used to be about 31% of, or 40% of customs that was collected. That declined by about 25 to 31%. So you can see that those goods where we have a high tariff on, where the bulk of the money comes from into the common revenue pool, are the ones that are quite sensitive to demand side pressures. And then we have lower tariffs or no tariffs on the capacity building capital goods. And what then often happens when you go through a recession, you see a contraction in those in those goods that are demand side sensitive, and And even when government introduced counter-cyclical fiscal measures, those counter-cyclical fiscal measures largely favor the capital goods where there are low or no tariffs. So even if we keep our spending as government high, or if we take a counter-cyclical approach, what we do find is that it doesn't have an impact on what is collected in customs, because of largely the function of the structure of our tariff book. So that's what's been happening, and you can see that. I mean, if 70% of your budget comes from customs, you're going to have a very volatile revenue stream within your budget. So this is an even more stark illustration of the volatility. So this shows SACCO revenue as a percentage of budget revenue. Look at what's happened to Swaziland, and that is the purple line, the top line. So SACCO, in 2008-09, SACCO was representing about 70% of Swaziland's budget revenue. What is 70% of their revenue has declined over a two-year period to where we currently are, to 30%. So that is a significant drop. There is a forecast for it to recover, but the recovery is going to be nowhere near what it was in 2008-09. The recovery by 2011-12 is looking as if it's going to be closer to where revenue was in 2005-06. Okay, so let's look at some of our ideas going forward. What we're going to be, as I said, there's a review that is agreed upon. All member states have agreed that we need to review this formula. There's an independent researchers that are going to be appointed to undertake this review. There'll be consultations with member states. There'll be negotiations. If it's required that the arrangement changes, some of the ideas that we are putting on the table, I will share with the committee now. So we think that we need to put in place something that is sustainable. Clearly, what we have at the moment is not sustainable. It is also not sustainable because of an important point which I did not make, is that the world is moving towards greater trade liberalization. You are going to see tariffs declining. Tariffs are not going to increase. Tariffs are going to decline. And when tariffs decline, you're going to see a smaller pool. You're going to see a contraction within the pool. There's a trend in terms of tax reforms that we lower, or even in most cases remove, taxes on goods that are on consumables, meaning that excise duties are also going to contract. And my SARS colleagues can also comment on this point. So we do need something that is sustainable. We think that what we put in place as to have a strong development trust that supports regional infrastructure, which supports regional integration. I mean, it's quite startling to many that we have this customs union in place for more than 100 years, but we still have at every border post between the members of SACCO two-stop border posts. I mean, if you look at the European Union, which is essentially a customs union and a monetary union, where there are borders, there are one-stop border posts. But in most cases, there are no border posts within those within the member states of the European Union. So if you cross from South Africa into Lesotho, you have to stop at the South African side. You have to get out of your car, get into your car, stop at the Maseru side, get out of your car, get into your car, and then cross. What one detects at those border posts is that the infrastructure, and this obviously varies from border post to border post, is that a lot of improvements can be made to the infrastructure at those border posts. There was a very interesting study that was conducted where the time it takes from, I think it was Richards Bay to Zambia to Lusaka was measured. And what was found is that about 80% of the time was spent at the border posts and not driving. And often we focus on improvement to roads, which is important, and I mean where roads need to be improved, they need to be improved. But what we do need to focus on and work on is what is happening at our border posts. And I'm sure this is a reflection at the border post between SACU members as well. So we think that with this money that we're collecting into SACU, instead of it going as a revenue shares that are calculated, that largely goes into recurrent expenditure, that money we can potentially use that money for developmental purposes that supports regional integration, regional infrastructure. We think that there should be greater transparency. We think that we need to bring Parliament into some of the decisions that are taken as to how that money gets used. Obviously, we need to look at the way that money is collected and distributed. In the case of the SACU agreement, it is an international agreement. It does give rise to a direct charge, which excludes the parliamentary appropriation. We think going forward that there should be a greater role for Parliament in looking at how this money gets allocated. We believe that SACU and its institutions can be a building block for a bigger customs union. So we believe that an arrangement that gets put in place should support the expansion of SACU and not have the opposite effect. It should contribute to a reduction in non-tariff barriers. At the moment, because intra-SACU trade is so important to record, that is the reason why you have two-stop border posts, because you want to record what leaves Lesotho and what enters South Africa. What leaves South Africa, what enters Africa, what enters Lesotho, because each of those countries will come to the trade reconciliation meeting and say, we've traded so much with South Africa, and therefore our share must be higher or lower or whatever it's supposed to be. We think that we need to do a lot of work in harmonizing customs systems and procedures, and the SARS colleagues can also come in here in terms of the work that is currently underway. So very quickly, what this slide shows is what we think needs to change from the current formula if we are thinking of a new formula. So remember I said that customs component is based on the volume of internal trade. It is largely redistributed. We think that what a country must receive in customs duty is what that country's economy produces. And that is a calculation that would obviously not be a simple one, because it cannot just be what that country collects. South Africa collects on behalf of the BLNAs for goods that end up finally within the BLNAs. But the BLNAs have to receive what the economy produces in terms of customs. And we should eliminate this intra-sakut trade data from the formula, because many would argue that there's a free trade area, so something like intra-saku shouldn't in fact be a factor. Goods must move freely across our borders. But what is happening is that, yes, there may not be a duty on those goods moving across our borders, but there's certainly a lot of certification that happens in terms of what is leaving and what is crossing. Yeah. The excise component is one that we're still considering, and we think that quite a bit of research needs to go into it. But excise, to a large extent, is a sovereign tax, and there is a view that we can eliminate excise duties completely from the component, right? Because what is happening at the moment is that when the South African Minister of Finance announces excise duties, that then applies to the BLNAs as well. So one of the things that Botswana has to wait for, Lesotho has to wait for, is the announcement made by the South African Minister of Finance, and that then applies to them as well. And they can then table their budget using what South Africa has said. In terms of the development component, we think that we should shift the weighting towards the development component, because we have potentially what the EU refers to as their structural fund or their development fund. And we think with this development fund, which could potentially be in the region of about 30 billion, can be put to much better use in terms of deepening regional integration, because after all, what we want to achieve with a customs union is the capacity of a country to trade and the ability of a country to trade. An interesting fact is that when SADC, the Southern African Development Community, introduced its free trade area, a couple of years later there was a study that was undertaken, and the study showed that very few countries benefited from the introduction of that free trade area. The two countries that did benefit were the countries that had the capacity to trade, so South Africa and Mauritius. So moving beyond free trade areas, we obviously need to focus on, what is it that will improve and increase trade? These are just some more ideas that we are throwing in, but we essentially saying that if in a new arrangement, each country retains their customs, we remove excise duties, and based on the size of your GDP, you contribute towards the development fund, and based on the size of your GDP, we can have GDP per capita, you will receive, and what you receive will then be for projects that will support regional integration and support industrial development in each of the countries. So just take a quick example. At the moment, South Africa is putting in about, let's say, just under 40 billion. It is getting out of the pool about half of that, 20 billion. What South Africa could consider doing under a new arrangement is that if it's going to retain the 40 billion, because that 40 billion, give or take, is going to be its customs collection and excise collection, it's going to retain that. South Africa could then say, I'm putting into the development fund 20 billion, because it is already giving away that 20 billion. So these are some ideas. What we do need a lot more discussion on and research on is How do you take decisions as to what the money is then going to be used for if it is not going to be used as, I suppose one can call it, unconditional transfers that goes into recurrent expenditure? So the last slide. So what this presentation intends to do is to just set the tone for discussion and need for further study. As I indicated, I think we need to come back. I think we need to have more detailed discussions with this committee. We are hoping that by the time the study is undertaken, that the negotiations to reach an agreement on a new arrangement should not take longer than 6 months. I mean, we all know that within multilateral institutions, negotiations can go on forever and ever and ever. We're hoping that we can try and conclude this during the period that South Africa is chairing SACU, which is for the next 12 months or so. We'll need to do some parallel consultations, or some parallel consultations will have to take place in each member state. There'll be formulation to the changes to the 2002 agreement. Now, there's also talk that there are some other fundamental changes that need to be brought, or revisions that need to be brought to the 2002 agreement. So what we may see over the next medium term is possibly a new agreement that then gets put in place. And one of the big changes in that agreement would have to be the revenue sharing arrangement. At some point, we will have to come back to Parliament for ratification. Being very optimistic, we are hoping that there will be at least council approval by December 2010 for a new arrangement. That will probably need to shift towards the middle of next year. And then hopefully we can implement the new revenue sharing arrangement not by 2011-12 but probably by 2012-2013. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Cole. I will now give this opportunity to members to interact with the presentation. I'm Rosin, Des, Madlamin, Justin, Luyenge, Koranov, in that order. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Time of crisis are time of opportunities. This is an item which has been on the agenda for a long time because, as the presenter said, is not sustainable. We have inherited a situation which was shaped by history, but there hasn't been really a willingness to have it as it is. And we try to improve it over the years. Now the urgency is greater because there is an economic crisis. Against this, I would like to put something to the presenter, perhaps that he can answer on the basis of his experience, not necessarily from a point of view of department, because I know it's not one of the proposals. But we killed the protocol on the free circulation of people within SADC. It was too problematic. But within SADU, why not transforming SADU in what ought to be, which is a free trade area with free circulation of goods, capital, and labor. I mean, we have split at least two nations. I can entertain the request without being asked by the chair, but I don't think that that's the technical reason for this. Okay, we'll see. Yes, thank you. The free circulation of people within SACU doesn't create problems. Reunited two nations which have been split by colonial events and colonial boundaries, eliminates all these and could give rise to a type of international cooperation in which the 20 billion, which effectively are now, or whatever the figure is, are now transferred from the South African fiscals to the South African people, to the neighboring countries, can be utilized for a process of coordinated international coordination, the international integration. So why not dealing with these issues within a framework of a free trade zone, free circulation of people, free circulation of capital, moving the ball a little forward as we want it and not as it was given to us by history.
All right, thank you, Chair. Let me start by welcoming the presentation. Chair, my first point is to extremely welcome this particular motion of ensuring that revenue generated from this process is used for regional integration and issues of infrastructure development in the member states. That's a positive intention, and I think it will assist a lot in terms of dealing with developmental challenges faced by respective member states. But my worry is around the capacity of the union, I mean, to monitor and evaluate the realization of this noble objective. To what extent, because I didn't get it from the presentation, to what extent is the union empowered, I mean, to deal with aspects of monitoring and evaluating performance of the respective member states on realizing this noble objective. And my last issue, Chair, is on the availability of any regional custom model that we can learn from. Is there any regional model that the union is considering as an example, I mean, to take this process forward? So as we use what is available, I mean, to shape or mold our intended approach. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, let me take also this opportunity to thank the department for coming back as requested with more information, although we still demand another information. But at least the department is aware that they still need to do a further study, which indeed we really do need some more detailed research. Then my question will be, the data that is used for forecast purposes, how effective is that data? Because if it is that effective, then maybe we can be able to zoom into that data so as to ensure the sustainability of the revenue collection. And it can also help us to find out the better model to implement or to identify the new formula, because indeed we do need to review the 2002 formula. Now, I was going to request the department, Honorable Chair, that when they further do the research, can they base it on the economy producers or economy status of an individual? I think it's going to be difficult. But without that data, we won't be able. South Africa will always remain being a member that is handling the overheads, because when those goods are docked in our ports, it's South Africans that make sure that they are removed from point one to point two. It's South African personnel that do the unpacking or whatever of those vessels. So, and all that is the overhead which is being shouldered or being handled by South Africa. So at the end of the day, South Africa remain with more expenditure than the other members. And then thirdly, to expedite this limitation of other countries like Zimbabwe. You know, if you drive from Joburg from Durban to Joburg, you could see how many trucks that are coming from the port going to Zimbabwe, and it's a lot of rents that we lose as the South Africa, because they are not within they are not a member of the union, so we are losing the. So if you can just expedite that to ensure that their formula is there, and all the members, the ministers or the council ministers, whatever you call it, they come together and make sure that they expedite the agreement, so as to ensure that at the end of the day, as South Africans, we do not shoulder so much of the overheads. Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson, this was a very informative presentation, I can say. But you see, sitting here as a member of a committee, when we meet again, I would like to see the presentation addressing two critical issues. Because I believe we should move away from using this important instrument of international trade to create parasite states. The aim of government of South Africa will be to make sure that there is an economic growth in the member states of SACU. You have indicated it here in terms of building infrastructure and so on and so on, and then reducing dependency from these member states. Now, I think you have worked out strategy. Would like to see the strategies as to how you are going to achieve that. And if you haven't worked out that strategy, I would like, Chairperson, that it should be presented to us. The second critical issue is that we also need to stop using this tariff as creating charity state, like South Africa becomes a charity state. So you also need to, and also it must grow the economy of South Africa. Tariffs must be used to grow the economy of South Africa. Whatever strategy you come up with or you have formulated already must address that issue. Because I think in terms of sustainability, one of the elements of the sustainability that we are talking about will be addressing those two issues. But if you have got that strategy already, maybe you will take us through as to what you are planning to do. Thank you, Chairperson.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I think I will sing the same song with the latter speaker around the role of South Africa in SACU. If I may ask Chair to the presenter as to whether the free trade aspect does affect other member states in the manner in which it affects South Africa. Is there any situation whereby imported goods were intended for any of the member states, but ultimately a portion of that of those goods is taken to South Africa, or it goes only the route of intended to be in South Africa, but all of a sudden 10% of that has to go to another member state? Then is there any link with the SACU and the World Bank in relation to realizing the infrastructural development agenda that they want to realize? If that is the case, is there any loan that is being serviced by these countries or through the customs union in terms of infrastructural development. And lastly, Chair, can it be elaborated more the issue of parallel consultations in each member state? What does that entail? Just a more elaboration or an example which has actually affected the working relations within the union. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Just two questions. The one is there a possibility that the new formula may destabilize financially the other countries when it's introduced in the next 6 or 12 months? And then secondly, we all know that the European Union is also busy trying to sign up new agreements, and we know that SACU is not speaking from one sheet with regard to this. How will this impact on the SACU agreements that you would like to reach?
Thanks, Chair. I want to know, firstly, the accuracy of collecting the duty collection. Because when you go to certain borders, you'll find that some of this information is handwritten. And when you go to South Africa, it's mostly computerized. And how do you synchronize this and the accuracy of that information? And secondly, is there any possibility, while I agree with you that most of the time is being spent on the borders, one speaker has already alluded on the trucks going to Zimbabwe. The difficult things to get to that border is because of trucks. You get 100 trucks before you got almost 3 to 10 kilometers away to the border because of trucks. Is there any possibility of having one-stop border? Check it there, you synchronize the information, and everything gets checked out, and you are done. And my last question is a harmonization of this procedure. My last question will be, how do you deal, I know it's the intended consequences, how do you see in future the migration? Or maybe let me ask this question, how do you deal with those countries that are affiliated even outside CUSA? You'll find the countries in CUSA and other unions. How do you deal with those? With the intended new procedure that you wanted to propose, then.
Thank you very much for those very interesting questions. We're going to split it between us. The very first question is. One that has an economic benefit, but it's also a very political issue. I'm going to answer it from an economic perspective. If one looks at the SACU agreement, doesn't speak about that next step to move towards free movement of labor. And doesn't make any reference to free movement of capital. But interestingly enough, there's a document that was produced by the Southern African Development Community called the Regional Indicative Strategic Development Plan, and it was produced at the time when former President Benjamin Mkapa from Tanzania was chairing. And that document sets out this very linear approach to regional integration, where it speaks about starting off with provincial preferential trade agreements, moving to free trade agreements, moving then to customs unions. From there you move to free markets, and in free markets you start freeing up the movement of labor, capital, and obviously you would have achieved the free movement of goods. Many people, many analysts, many researchers looking at Southern Africa, looking at the number of landlocked countries that you have in Southern Africa, would argue very strongly in support of any regional integration program moving to that stage where you do start having the free movement, the free movement of capital, free movement of people, to follow what you've already established in terms of the free movement of goods and services. My personal opinion is that it may help us with the current problems that we are having with migration and immigration. But certainly something that is plotted and set out within the SADC regional integration program. I hope that answers the question. But I think it was more of a statement than a question, and a statement that certainly is one that applies currently to the European Union, where you do have that free movement of capital and labor. The next question is a question on the regional integration and infrastructure fund or development fund that supports regional integration and infrastructure. Very important question, because we would have to look at the appropriate model for how decisions are going to be taken on how that money is going to be used, if it is indeed going to be used for very specific development projects. Off the top of my head, I would imagine that we could turn to the capacity that already exists within the Development Bank of Southern Africa. They are doing a lot of infrastructure projects in Southern Africa. Many of those projects are in the other SACU member states. They certainly understand the terrain well from a technical perspective. So we may want to turn to the Development Bank to see what kind of support they can provide. There's also the African Development Bank that has recently opened up a regional office based in South Africa. They're working quite closely with the Development Bank of Southern Africa. So we'd want to look at the most appropriate body, the most skilled and experienced body that would help us in developing and finalizing an arrangement on how that development fund can be managed. A regional model that can be used, I think it's about bits and pieces from different arrangements. COMESA, which is the common market for Eastern and Southern Africa, is progressing quite nicely towards a customs union. There's also the East African community. There's obviously the EU. There are other communities within the Gulf states and also the Caribbean. So I think it's about understanding how they each operate. I do, however, think that we're going to have to pay a lot more attention to our own environment, the arrangement that we've had for 100 years, what we can undo and how we should be undoing it, and how we put something in place which and I'll come back to the question that was asked on where does it leave countries if we change the current revenue sharing arrangement. The next question on the data,
that is used for the forecast. Let me turn to my colleagues from SARS.
Thank you, Chair. Honourable members will recall that last year we had reduced the revenue forecast by about 70 billion at the MTBPS, which was quite a dramatic reduction. And if one had to look at the revision in imports, we had to revise our imports forecast down by 8 billion. At that time, the growth was further was also revised down because based on what we were seeing was happening in the market or in the trade sector, the growth in imports had to be reduced from 3.2 to minus 20.3. So I think last year adequately or rather dramatically so pointed to the fact as to how all we were surprised by the extent of the or the depth of the recession and how badly it impacted on South Africa. Now, having said that, South Africa actually came off relatively unscathed if you compare what happened in the developed world. But having said that, nevertheless, it did point out that South Africa also suffered. So, yes, the forecast for the revenue allocation is set a year in advance. But unlike the MTBPS, it doesn't offer us a chance to revise. If you look at the revenue target, revenue figures, we have the opportunity to revise it at least two occasions. But once we agreed to the MTBPS, we're virtually locked in into that. And then it can only be reset once the actuals become known. And that's what caused the dilemma, if I could put it as mild as that, of the BLNS countries. We are seeing a recovery, but as the presenters pointed out, recovery is rather slow, and the recovery currently is running at about 2005-2006 levels. So we would accede that, or we concede rather, that our forecast for that particular year was not correct, and that the economy drove us to revise that quite significantly down. However, having said that also, it's when you are on an upward movement that it's easy to forecast. It's very difficult to forecast in a recessionary period because the demand patterns are driven by psychology as well as economics of traders and of consumers. We can provide a lot more data on the methods of forecasting if you so wish.
Then on the question on South Africa's role in a union, having being the largest economy in Africa, that in a sub-regional or regional arrangement, that we're going to have, I think, a much larger role in any kind of arrangement. I mean, if one looks at SACU, Lesotho is landlocked within South Africa. Most of Swaziland, except for the Maputo, I think it's the Namasha border, the rest of it is all landlocked within South Africa. Landlocked Botswana shares a large border with South Africa, and I mean we have very strong historical ties with Namibia in terms of trade. So in terms of the size of economy, in terms of the size of capital formation in South Africa, I think one can expect that most trade that's going to be entering a union, whether we're thinking SACU or whether we're thinking SADC, is going to flow via South Africa. South Africa's manufacturing capacity will also lead us to argue that South Africa for a long time into the future is going to be the supplier of final goods to not only the other SACU members but also to many of the SADC members. And I think that now has to raise issues around whether the other countries in this arrangement is whether there's a trade diversion effect. So in a sense, almost forced to buy from South Africa because you're in this arrangement with South Africa. And the question then gets raised is, can you get that cheaper elsewhere?
So in terms of that price raising effect, where you now buy a good from South Africa, whereas you could have bought it cheaper from elsewhere, do you require some or other form of compensation? And when South Africa enters into these arrangements, being such a big and different economy to the others, would South Africa have to consider some or other form of compensation that it then pays to those members for them being part of? I mean, think of the EU, Germany, France, compared with the smaller EU members. There is a large share that Germany would pay into a structural fund, and that structural fund is then used to uplift the smaller economies, the newer members within the EU. Does South Africa play that kind of role? And is it going into the future, if we consider regional integration to be important for our own growth, are we going to have to put something on the table in the form of compensation to the smaller countries? But then others would argue that, well, Germany may put more money on the table in the EU, but it also has a greater say. And the question is, do we have that greater say? Membership of Zimbabwe, I think that the data, the facts speak for themselves. I mean, you have 12 million Zimbabweans. You have a country that was our biggest trading partner prior to 2000. The current figures still look very impressive. It makes a lot of sense for Zimbabwe to be in a economic arrangement with South Africa, whether it's a free trade area or a customs union. I think it would benefit the arrangement, SACU arrangement, to bring Zimbabwe into. Obviously, that's going to take fairly complex negotiations. I also think, considering the currency situation, that it may make a lot of sense for Zimbabwe to start thinking about a closer association with the common monetary area. So Zimbabwe is certainly, I think, if we should start looking at how SACU is opened up, Zimbabwe would certainly be one of those that we would want to approach to come to be part of the arrangement. Angola is another country that I think we should also be considering. The two critical issues, I think they were very strong statements that were made, and I think those would certainly be what we keep in mind as we firm up our proposals and ensure that they form the pillars of a new arrangement, because I think those statements lend themselves to this idea of ensuring that you put something in place that is sustainable. Do you want to take the next question on the FTA and whether there is a re-export effect here?
In terms of re-exports, it does happen that there could be re-exports from Botswana to South Africa for goods that were probably brought in from external SACU country member states via Botswana to South Africa. But in most cases, it will be goods coming through South Africa, destined for use in South Africa and being redirected to the BLNS. Very little.
I mean, just to follow up, I think also as infrastructure improves, there's a big infrastructure project between Botswana and Zambia. It's a bridge crossing the Zambezi River. I mean, as that is completed,
you may find an increase in goods that may be coming through Zambia, Botswana, in South Africa. The World Bank question. From time to time, there's World Bank studies that are undertaken that feeds into some of our thinking within SACU. We don't have there isn't a SACU loan from the World Bank, but there are member states within SACU that have World Bank loans, also African Development Bank loans. Some of those loans are in the form of budget support. Others are in the form of infrastructure projects in those countries, Lesotho, Swaziland, Botswana, and Namibia. The parallel consultations, that is essentially referring to the consultations like the consultation that we're having currently, that is happening in other member states. I suppose consultation, in its true sense, being a fairly informal word, would probably be consultations between departments and other stakeholders. Parliamentary hearings, I suppose, would be a lot more formal than consultations, and this is also happening within other member states. Will a new arrangement destabilize the BLNS? Well, that is what we would try to avoid, or that is what we, I suppose, must avoid. We saw the dependency that has built up, and that dependency is not new to the 2002 agreement, and that has started with the 1969 agreement already. How we do that would be, any new arrangement would probably need to be programmed over a period, so that as you introduce the new arrangement, you also look at what are the complementary tax reforms or fiscal reforms that need to take place in those countries that are now weaning themselves off this dependency on what is considered to be a very volatile form of revenue. It's quite interesting to see that that Swaziland has now set up a revenue authority. I'm told there was an ad that was in the Sunday newspapers where they were looking for something like 100 staff. The person that is heading up that revenue authority is the former permanent secretary of finance in Swaziland. And he also spent some time with the South African Revenue Services in the form of a work placement internship type. So countries are certainly starting to look at, how do we wean ourselves off this SACU dependency through reforms to the administration and also reforms to policy. If one looks at Minister Majozi Sithole's budget speeches, Minister of Finance of Swaziland, over the past 3-4 years, there would be a common theme that would run through all those speeches, and that is we need to break away from this dependency on SACU revenue. And in his own words, he would say that it is unsustainable for a country like Swaziland. Minister Tahani, the finance minister of Lesotho, has also regularly mentions this in his budget speeches. So a new arrangement would have to look at that dependency and ensure that we don't stabilize the budgets of the BLNS. The IPAs were a major issue in the past 2 years. The IPAs and the disagreement on the IPAs came very close to tearing this union apart. It's no secret. It was published in many newspapers. Many statements were made by politicians on both sides.
I'm told by my colleagues in trade and industry that there's an agreement that by the end of December 2010, and they've requested the EU to give them time till December 2010, that some agreement will be reached. So we need to watch what is going to be developing over the next couple of months. But there are unresolved issues. Do you guys want to take the accuracy of collections of trade data, and then also one-stop border posts, and then this issue of migration? That's the question.
Thank you. The issue of accuracy of data is a cause of concern, as the presenters pointed out, that trade reconciliation meetings, it often is a source of a lot of discussions. However, SARS is in the process of modernizing its custom systems and also engaging our member state countries to build capacity there. So that's a journey that we have embarked on to get more onto electronic base as opposed to a manual base. But that will take some time. It will probably roll out over the next 1 to 2 years. However, I think I just need to reemphasize the point that the presenters made on the issue of one-stop border posts. Because such a large part of the customs revenue contribute to the revenue collections of our member states, they would be very reluctant to solely rely on South African declaration of movement of goods, and therefore they would have to have a very keen, or they would maintain a very keen interest on making sure that they have a say in, or not a say, but that they can count what passes their borders. So the journey to a single border post, we believe, will be accompanied by the modernization of systems where both sides have sufficient confidence in the recording of the data so as not to have to duplicate systems in a manual manner like it's currently the case. Also, once the issue of intra-trade is lessened in the revenue calculations, that will also move us further or quicker forward towards a single border post. So yes, there are deficiencies in the data collection, but there's a electronic development process in our modernization program that will hopefully take care of some of these discrepancies that we are now seeing and sources of discontent.
The one-stop border post is certainly the way that we want to go, and we do have a directive from the Minister of Finance that we develop a policy framework which would be informed by quite a lot of work that was already done on the Lebombo Rasana Gashia one-stop border post between South Africa and Mozambique. So we can use a lot of those lessons. There were some problems with the financing model that was used for that one. We think that some of those problems can be solved or solvable, but certainly one-stop border post is something that we need to look at very seriously. It's also something that we think we could win a lot of support for within SACU and also within SADC. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, National Treasurer Insad. Honourable members, do you have any follow-up questions to National Treasurer Insad? Yes, madam.
No, it's just an addition that when the new formula is being formulated, can they also look at the disposal policy, our disposal policy at our ports, if that is possible, of all those confiscated goods?
Thank you very much. In the absence of questions, I want to thank you, honorable members, for being so economical about the questions and engagements. This is the shortest meeting I've ever attended in this institution. We'll also thank the presenters for availing themselves and for the information that they've shared with this committee. And we're hoping that this engagement between ourselves is not ending here today. It's the beginning of the process as you are formulating the new approach, as this committee would like to participate in that process meaningfully. We are going to have our own discussions after this as a committee to develop our approach in terms of how our submissions can be incorporated in your processes. Honorable members, colleagues, thank you very much. This meeting stands adjourned.